There were no inflatables to speak of at Reading FC's final away day of the season, and therefore ne'er a balloon in the house to pop as the Royals slumped to a 4-1 defeat at Norwich. Unless, of course, you count the Canaries' subsequent title celebrations. Welcome to episode 263 of the Tarleton Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, the podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans. And well, last week we spoke about the end of the season, basically. Now we've got the penultimate game of the season, the first dead rubber. Were Reading about to throw out a brilliant performance just to show that it was the pressure all along? Well, okay, maybe not. To talk about a 4-1 defeat to Norwich with me this week is Simeon Pickup, the editor of the Tarleton. How's it going, mate?
Well, pretty deflated to take on the balloon metaphor, but you know, I'm not too disappointed after the season's already gone, but still annoying, but there we go.
Yeah, you just said to me that just before we start recording that it's just as well that performance didn't have anything riding on it, because it's not the sort of performance you want to turn in when you need 3 points. But let's get on then into the recap. We'll cover that a little bit. We've got a bit of a mailbag as well. We've got some news bites to talk about, some good news actually got in the news bites, and then we've got the final game of the season in big match previews to talk about. So let's go into the recap. Big thank you to our sponsor ZCZ Film as we go into that, and also our Patreon subscribers as well. So big thanks to everyone who continues to get in touch with the podcast and support it in any way possible and listen in as well, especially for this game. Probably not the best game to be talking about this weekend, but let's do it then. Let's cover the ground and talk about Norwich 4, Reading 1.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So, about 20 minutes into this game, Reading were looking really pretty. Josh Lawrence scoring an opener, putting Reading 1-0 to the good. Nice little free kick routine with him and Michael Olise just put into the far post. That's definitely been a real strength of the season. And then, you know, I was coming to terms at that moment, Sim, with the idea that sod's law, as soon as the pressure's off, Reading go and play well and get a really good, you know, performance and win at a, obviously, you know, the best team in the division. And it was the pressure all along that was holding us back. And actually, we're a really good game, really good team. And we'll put good game of football in to remind our fans as we go into next season that is the case. What were you thinking at 1-0?
To be honest, even 1-0, I was thinking, you know what, Reading are going to come up with some way to lose this game. We were playing well in the first half, to be honest, and whether it was 1-0 or 1-1, we looked positive. We looked like a team that kind of was enjoying the occasion, basically, and it wasn't a team that was just going to roll over and let Norwich kind of rubber stamp their title win, as they eventually did in the second half, for sure. But in the first half, it was very enjoyable, I must say, and it looked very much like players wanted to be there. They wanted to try things, and in contrast to how kind of rigid and lifeless we've looked to a large extent in the last few months, it was refreshing to see, and obviously frustrating to, given how it went in the second half, but still certainly positive to take from the first half.
Yeah, it really felt like mistakes at the back were the key thing for this game. We had Lewis Gibson and Tom Holmes playing at centre-back together, probably the first time they've played together. But even so, that's because Liam Moore was out of the hamstring injury, obviously Morrison and McIntyre out as well. But even so, the mistakes that were made, the first goal in particular came from a poor pass from Tom Holmes, really under no pressure. Second goal over Ajari just doesn't track his man, and you could argue that Holmes can come across the cover and doesn't. Third is a great hit, you know, credit that, in my mind, that's a 1-1 draw, one good goal against one good goal, because the fourth again, I hate to pin it on him, but Tom Holmes with another poor pass that Timo Pukki picked up to seal the win. And is this, I suppose, in a way, it's kind of a good time to make mistakes, a lack of experience, because Tom Holmes will hopefully get better for it. It's just disappointing that, you know, you don't want to have to go through that. You kind of want to just have the perfect world without mistakes and everything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an important moment for him. Obviously, it's not a good moment on the day, but it's the kind of experience he's going to look back at and think, this is what I learned from, basically, a lot. And it's all about how you deal with the pressure in little moments like that, about the little decisions you make. for the first goal, look, he can boot it away, and he really should do. Credit to him, I guess, for trying something, for trying to play out from the back and kind of and do something a little bit more progressive with the ball. But obviously it comes with experience that you just need to get rid of the ball in a moment like that. And I guess looking at the game overall, not just at Holmes, but Gibson giving the ball away a couple of times in the first half as well, Reading really lack that kind of that one experienced presence who just kind of exudes confidence and leadership and just that sense of knowing what to do. And I think we've really missed Morrison in particular. Liam Moore's obviously been a big miss today as well, but specifically Michael Morrison with his experience and his kind of real kind of no-nonsense attitude in moments like that, it really does help. Obviously doesn't get you points every time, but it does kind of... It's very obvious by its absence in games like this.
Yeah, definitely. One player to talk about as well, Dejan Tetek playing in centre mid, making his full league debut, starting with Andy Rinomata out with a toe injury. We also saw Mamadi Camara come on late on as well. Probably didn't see very much of him, but what did you make of Tetek in the centre midfield?
To be honest, there's barely anything to say about him. And for a young player who's coming in at a game against Norwich, really tough match, that's a good thing. The fact that he didn't really have anything bad in his afternoon, that he didn't kind of make any obvious errors. There was one nice little moment in the first half where he kind of won a free kick coming in from the right, that nice little driving run. But generally speaking, it was just tidy, keeping things ticking over. And that shows maturity, it shows confidence. And I guess on a day that we've talked about Tom Mahomes not having those things and making some avoidable errors, the fact that someone else has not made any errors and he's not kind of been intimidated by the occasion is something that's really good for him. And Kamara obviously didn't really have much time to do anything with the game, but still a good opportunity for him and good for him to get the experience coming on in a big match.
Yeah, I think it's an important point to make, actually, that not making any mistakes is a solid debut in and of itself. Even if you're a £90 million centre midfielder, whether you're an 18-year-old or I think Tetek's still a teenager coming in for your debut, it's all important. And one thing I would actually say, going back to Holmes really briefly, is that earlier in the season, we saw Tom McIntyre have let's face it, it was a real stinker of a game against Preston. I think he kind of made a mistake and also gave away a penalty. Those sort of games you do have to go through as a young player. We can think of Alex Pearce when he was at Reading, young player, went through that sort of stuff. Alex McCarthy as well in goal. Even attacking players, like Gylfie Sigurdsson, had pretty bad days at the office. So those come and go, but it's important to get Tetek on the field, and so maybe he is the sort of player that Reading are going to rely on a little bit more. In that second half, you kind of touched on it earlier as the really disappointing thing. Reading had just one shot in the second half, and that was from outside the box, which kind of stuck out at me. Was this a case of Reading giving up, or Norwich, obviously, they needed to avoid defeat to win the title? Was it just a sense that, they knew they were the better team and they just pressed home that advantage?
Kind of a bit of both, really. Norwich were pretty poor in the first half. I know they got the goal and they had a couple of chances before the break, but they left a lot of space open, and Reading were really good at exploiting that. Maybe not in the final third in terms of converting opportunities, but there was a lot of space, and Reading were able to get out Norwich because of that. After the break, they just shut it up and they really managed it effectively. And that's, I think, been a hallmark of Norwich this season. They've had that maturity to kind of see games out. You look at the reverse fixture as well, for example, they managed to just shut it down basically, and Reading couldn't get at them. Second off was another example of that. Norwich got on the ball, they kept it well. Reading didn't really have an answer for that, and particularly when Swift went off and I think Elise went off a little bit after that, the momentum went, the ideas went, and obviously as goals start to go in, the concentration goes, the discipline goes a little bit. There were some niggly fouls that we could have done without, and just a bad day at the office as it went on.
Yeah, well, I think let's probably throw some more stats at you and some reaction from Veljko Paunović and leave it there. That was our sixth defeat in seven against Norwich. Also the 11th meeting in a row between the two teams without either side keeping a clean sheet. So if anyone gamble aware, but if anyone bet on both teams scoring, then you probably were on for a bit of a winner for this one, and that backed up. Paunovic, as we're doing this right after the game, he hasn't spoken, or they haven't released the footage of him speaking to the club media yet, so I'll just read out what he said. He said, "We conceded a goal that was avoidable, and then we made some mistakes. We could also have done better. It was all in all an attempt to be competitive and honour the game, to do our best to win. In the first half, it worked very well, but we did not start well after the break. With that said, they took over very quickly and they got their goal advantage. After that, we tried to fight back, but the third and fourth goal were due to the fact that we were in a rush in an attempt to compete and recover the advantage." So Paunovic there, not too heavy on his team, not too critical after that game. I think he probably realises that not the most important game in Reading Football Club's history, so wants to just kind of get on and move on from that. And we'll be doing exactly the same then. And let's go into the mailbag and hear what you have been asking us this week.
You're listening to the Tarthurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
As we discussed last week, and as I'm sure any, you know, football fan will be aware, that there is a social media boycott going on this week, or this weekend, from Friday 3 p.m. until the end of Monday, and that means that the we joined in that, and as the fight against racism and abuse online, we felt it was absolutely necessary to add our, you know, what we consider a small voice, but nonetheless a voice and platform to vocalise that message and to boycott social media for the weekend. So as a result of that, one of the kind of very minor knock-on effects is that we haven't got much of a mailbag this week. Also, all of our stuff, as you probably listen to this, all of our stuff is still on the website. All the player ratings report is still going on, but it's just not being promoted on social media. So we've got a couple of messages for the mailbag this week then. Ollie Allen saying, "Would you keep any of the loanees for next season?" So that is Alpha Semedo, the centre mid, Thomas Estevez, the right back, and Lewis Gibson, the centre back. Gibson and Semedo for me, Sim, no. The one who's interesting is Estevez, on the basis that right back, if we can't keep Michael Morrison and or Tom McIntyre, who are both at a contract at the end of the season, ideally we keep both of them. But if only one of those goes, I think Estevez is an important player to keep on, because we're not going to be able to get by with the one right back. It's not a very good idea. Tom Holmes can move over, so if we've got the centre-back cover and Holmes can move over, then that's great. But without that centre-back cover for Holmes, I think Estevez, probably not the most expensive option in the world, might be a good one to keep around.
He's definitely the one that, of those three, I'd like to keep, ideally. I think he mentioned in an interview that he's going to go back to Portugal and there's not really much chance of him staying at Reading. Would have been nice to see him again, because he's a talented guy and you can tell that he's got really, really got something about him in terms of his ability going forwards. Haven't seen that too regularly this season because of a general lack of game time, general kind of need to build into the English physicality and speed of the game, but certainly an impressive talent, and I'm sure he'll go on to big things elsewhere. As for the other two, Semedo, for ages I thought he was just being played out of position as a number 10 and wasn't too impressive. But even when he's been brought back into a deeper role, for me, he's just not up to it, really. He doesn't dominate a game as much as you'd want. Gibson, similar with Estevez, he's not really had enough game time, but in the games that he has played, he's just looked not as sharp and not as dominating at the back as you need a centre-back to be. Really, he needs to go somewhere and just play week in, week out. Obviously, it hasn't happened at Reading, but that's not really something that we can think about in terms of having him for next season.
No, I think with Gibson, you are right, he needs a 46-game season. I think probably lower Championship is more of his level at the moment. It's difficult with these sort of players because, like we say with Estevez, there is in theory a player that can play like European football in there, and you want to have that player, but you don't want to, it's pointless having, you know, the player that's a League One talent in the Championship and then he goes and then he becomes the European player. That's not beneficial for Reading. So I think with Gibson, he's just not at the level that we are actually at this year. Next year, maybe it doesn't matter, mind you. But yeah, him and Semedo, I don't think there's much point. I think both of them, if both of them played for League One clubs and we were, you know, they'd signed on, you know, free transfers from League One, we'd probably say, yeah, that's about right. But because both of them have come from really good teams, we probably think that they're a bit better than they really are. So, yeah, I think Estevez in those circumstances is the only one for me. Maybe a bit of a good chance to have a bit of a clean slate if that's what Paunovic wants. The other question this week then, do always fire in your questions to the Facebook and Twitter and the Gmail as well, which is thetylerstend@gmail.com. Sean Burgess saying, one player you most want to be sold, one player you most want to sign. Now, I suppose, unless you've got anyone specific for signing, Sim, I'll probably go for one position that you most want to sign someone. And for me, I think it might be, it's so difficult. I think I'm probably going to say a winger is one player most want to sign. I think in reality, Elise going, and with the system that we've got, as someone who has direct pace, and Mate kind of has it, but someone who is more of a Mo Barrow or Jimmy Kebbe type winger who can bring the ball out and offer that alternative option, you know, to buzz around Jao and all that sort of stuff, and just be a natural winger, because we played most of the season without natural wingers. I think that's the area that, just to add that bit of something else, would be good for me.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I think if you look at the first half today, yes, Reading were good at kind of exploiting space to get into the final third. But if we'd had, say, Elise or Rajari taken out for a really quick winger, someone who can get in behind, you can make those kind of those penetrative runs, we might well have got another goal or two. And that is kind of something that really we've lacked throughout this season. It's kind of meant we don't have that extra edge. I'd love Lewis Baker back, to be honest, to go with a specific player. Just his ability to kind of control a game with his range of passing and from a deep position as well. Obviously, we've got Swift who can play there, but given that he's gone in as a number 10 this season under Paunovic, really, I'd like someone to just sit deep in that two alongside either Rinnemhonta or Laurent. Just let us play passes, dictate the game a little bit more, and give us another route of attack, because a lot of the time this season we've had kind of good energy and good physicality in that double pivot. We've not had an ability to play passes through the lines as much, to really kind of break teams down in that kind of sense. And if you got someone in with Lewis Baker's technical ability, I think he'd give us that extra edge in possession.
No, that's a good name. In terms of player to be sold, this is the difficult thing for me, is that if we're about to do what I just said and what we've talked about with a winger, and if we turn into a team that plays, I think probably it would have to be, for this particular player, a 4-4-2, fast wingers on the counter-attack, get balls into the box and attack with pace. I think probably that's the system that I would say most suits George Puskás, in that it gets balls into the box and it's action, and he can use his kind of, you know, he's got sharpness in the 18-yard box and that works for him. But every other system we've tried for him has not worked. And if it has worked, it's worked a bit, or it's kind of worked for 5 minutes and not worked for 90 minutes, or not worked for two games out of three. And if we're not going to do that, I think it's time to say goodbye to Puskás, because really we've had two seasons now. Yes, he's been injured for pretty much the first half of this season, but we were dying. We're crying out for a striker to challenge Lucas Shaw and to take the load off him in the second half of the season, and he's just not been able to do it. And that's three managers now he's had a good go at, you know, and two seasons. I just, for me, he's just the one that it's not beyond the realms of imagination that someone would offer us, you know, £2-3 million for him, because he's still got potential, he's still got the name and all that. But I think it probably just about time to say goodbye.
I'm not hugely against that, but for me, he's still got potential. And as you said, he's been injured for an awful lot of this season. And given that he was essentially trying to get up to speed with English football in his first season, been injured a lot this season, I still think there's a lot more to come. And we have seen flashes that he can play up front on his own in this system. Not regularly, but he has put in a few encouraging performances, I think, yeah, in the absence of Zhao. I would be looking more at a player who, for me, has resale value for a few million, who is paid a lot, going by his last contract probably. Someone who's been here for a little while and just hasn't really hit the heights. And I think we can do better by moving him on and bringing through Tom McIntyre at the back, which for me is Liam Moore. I don't dislike the guy. I think he's done a good job over the last few years here, but we can do better by moving him on, bringing Tom McIntyre in, and there's a lot of money to be gained there. When you look at our balance sheet that kind of came out a few weeks ago, it makes a lot of sense on the pitch. It makes a lot of sense financially, and it'd be a good decision for us.
Yeah, if you offered me next season, McIntyre and Morrison as the first choice centre-backs with Holmes as reserve, and then a kid as like Nelson Abbey, or, if we did bring in someone to challenge those three and to be a fourth centre-back, if you offered me that as part of selling Liam Moore for, let's say, 4 million quid or just a random number, I probably would take it, to be honest, because that has long-term potential with two academy young players who we think are going to be good coming through. And also that's probably just about good enough. I always think that with defences, obviously a really good centre-back is a really good centre-back, but at our level, you just need to coach them properly and you just need the tactical setup to be right. People like Neil Warnock and, to a slightly lesser extent, Tony Pulis, and these sort of managers who have always bounced around the Championship and done well at the Championship, they've not always had amazing centre-backs, but they've made them tactically into good centre-backs. And therefore, if you offered me Morrison and McIntyre next season, I think that's ample quality at centre-back to do something with.
Yeah, absolutely. And we saw that partnership work well earlier on in the season. I think it was maybe December into January when Moore wasn't there, but we did have Morrison and McIntyre, and there's still a good balance there. You've got experience, you've got youth, you've got McIntyre can bring the ball out and is really capable with the ball, I think, kind of driving up the pitch in possession. I don't see a major drop-off if Moore is replaced with McIntyre, to be quite honest with you. It's not like it's much of a gamble. You've still got quality there. You've still got someone in McIntyre who I think has the potential to go on and be better than Moore. Again, I don't want to be too harsh on Moore because he has been a good servant for the club in the last few years. But given the talent that you have coming through below him, Nelson Abbey, as you mentioned, Daryl Dorset as well, it makes sense to move him on and bring in all of that money. And yeah, a good decision if we can make it.
Yeah, obviously, as you say, if we know how to sell, if we can negotiate a good sale, then there's plenty to be had. But that is the big question, isn't it? Is are Reading capable of that? They've not done it much recently, but that's basically almost what we have the future of the club in on this summer. One other player, I wouldn't sell him, but it's a question of if you get offered five or let's say £6 million for Ovie Ajayi, do you take it? Just a thought, I guess. I think really with Ajayi, the reason you don't sell him is because the level he's at the moment is decent, but there's always that chance the next season he could explode and be a 15 goal, 15 assist winger. So let's see how that goes for next season, and do send in your own thoughts on that for the, as I say, on the Tylerstend at gmail.com and the Twitter and Facebook. Let's go now to some news bites.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetylehurstend.com.
First up, I will catch you up on what's been going on around the club this weekend. The women's team are playing Brighton at Sunday 2 p.m. Win that and go sixth. That's sixth versus seventh, actually, with Reading just behind Brighton at the moment. Under-23s, good weekend for them. They beat Wolves 5-0. Two goals from Femi Aziz after an early goal from Jaden Onan, Tano Watson, and an own goal also on the score sheet. The under-23s actually have Wolves away now on the last day of the season for them. That's on May the 10th. And the under-18s won 3-2 against Norwich, no less, today. Abercholman with one, and Purcell with two. They've got Arsenal on Tuesday, I believe. And also, the Football League Awards happens in the week, and we had a man in the Team of the Year, and that same man won Young Player of the Season, Michael Olise. Fantastic achievement, 43 league games, 6 goals, 11 assists so far. And Sim, I must say, I was a little bit surprised he won it, but a huge achievement nonetheless.
I'm not surprised at all, to be honest. He's been so impressive this season. You've got to remember that this is basically his first regular entire season in senior football, basically. He's not like, say, Gylfi Sigurdsson, who went out and had a couple of loan spells before he had that breakthrough campaign at Reading.
Or indeed Max Ahrens, who he was up against at Norwich, yeah, who basically played in the Premier League last year.
Yeah, absolutely. Elise had some game time under, I think, under Mark Bowen and maybe a little bit under Jose Gomez. But generally speaking, this is his proper first season, his proper first consistent regular season. And for him to get up to speed so quickly, because remember, he was assisting goals and scoring goals right at the beginning of the season. For him to do that is so impressive, and he plays like someone who's not that young at all, to be honest, with so much maturity, so much intelligence, so much confidence. You can talk about players kind of having too much confidence, but he has just that right amount where he knows his own ability and he knows how to put it into practice. And it's an absolute delight to watch him, and a really big shame, to be honest, that we're probably not going to get to see him in front of a full crowd at Reading next season. Maybe we will if on an unlikely chance we manage to tie him down to a new contract. Not going to happen, but you never know. But look, it's a big indication of how good the academy is, of how well he's developed. And yeah, an absolutely thoroughly deserving winner of the Young Player of the Season award.
Yeah, I'd say my reason for being a little bit surprised is because I thought Max Ahrens was going to win it, being a, you know, the defender of the team that won the league. But I think you're right in that this is his first season. I think he didn't have an assist for Reading going into the season, or maybe not a goal either. So really, to have put together the season he has, it's not something we can take for granted. And I think he's probably going to win the club's player of the season award as well. The sort of player who would, you know, I think Rinomoto won it a couple of years ago. We do like to give the academy players a good boost in that. And that's, I think the voting for the club's player season award ends in the next couple of days before the Huddersfield game. Tyler Sten's award, I believe, will be up at the end of the season. So it'll be interesting to see. Who do you think is likely to win the club's one?
The club's one, I got a feeling it might be Schwau, to be honest, because of all the goals he scored. I know he's gone off the boil in the last few months, but it's easy to kind of point at his goals and say this is a very kind of tangible reason why we were so high up in the table in the first place, let alone the kind of the drop off. For me, it's Michael Morrison, because of his sheer consistency and importance for us at the back. Obviously not as obvious a contribution as someone like Lucas Schwell or Michael Elise with his assists and his goals, but still really important. And I guess either way, the fact that you can name a couple of really good candidates quite quickly shows just how much Reading have come on in the last few years, because a couple of years ago we didn't really have anyone to talk about. Maybe I think two in 2018-19, it was difficult to come up with players, and the fact that we've got quite a few this time shows just how much we've improved in the last year.
We just used to give it to the goalkeeper as a default for the last 3 or 4 years, haven't we? I think, because we said on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, that it's always interesting that our you know, fan vote tends to go different to the club fan vote. And I saw that when the club fan vote was announced, that Josh Lauren got a lot of love. Maybe that is a sign that he'll win our one, with, you know, with our social media maybe taking more of a sway than it does on the Reading one. But yeah, it's interesting to see. I honestly don't have an answer for my one at the moment. I think there's a lot of good candidates, all of them you could name. Raphael probably just out of the picture this year. Andy Yeardom, I think I gave it to 2 years ago, just out the picture. John Swift again was my last year's, just out the picture because of injuries. But yeah, all of those guys are good candidates. Liam Moore wouldn't rule it out as well, with the club on as well, being a bit of a popular guy. So good to round off then, a good, really, you know, really good award for Michael Lee. So really well deserved. Great to see the recognition for him there, and maybe it just bumps up the transfer fee by a couple million quid in the process, which will do no harm. Let's go into then the final game of the season, the final big match preview of the season.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Set Your Eye follows to 12:30 p.m. on Saturday, May the 8th. It is Huddersfield at home. It is the final game of the season. The chance, well, if Reading are going to build any momentum for next season, this is it. This is the momentum if we can get a win. Huddersfield drew 1-1 at home to Coventry today. They've taken 17 points from 23 matches in 2021, which I think certainly going into this weekend, that was the worst in the league. So they're not on good form. Where do you see this one going, Sim?
I think given their poor form and our form, it's going to only really go one way, which is a dour, absolutely dreadful 0-0 draw. That obviously we've never had one of those against Huddersfield, because any such games against Huddersfield that have been boring 0-0s, I've put out of my mind, which definitely didn't happen at Wembley. Let's ignore that. But in all seriousness, I think both teams are going to be happy to see this season go, to be honest. Huddersfield obviously struggled a lot more than us this year, but even so, it's the kind of game that I think for a lot of the players may feel like a bit more of a chore than anything else, and I don't expect to see a huge amount of quality from either team, basically.
Well, neither team is allowed to say that their heads are already on the beach unless they're thinking of Cornwall, because you're not allowed to leave the country until May the 17th. So any players jetting off to Abu Dhabi on the night of the game might just have a bit of a questionable look sent towards them. But Reading are 3 unbeaten against Huddersfield. Since the start of 2014, we've won 5, lost 5 and drawn 4 in this fixture. So not really much to separate the teams over the years. Yeah, it just feels like one more game that we could probably do without. If you offered certainly some of the fans or some of the players the chance to end the season now, maybe they'd have taken it before the Norwich game. Probably don't want to finish on a 4-1 defeat, mind. Is keeping seventh hugely important? I know we're 2 points clear of Cardiff with a worse goal difference. So probably a good idea to keep hold of seventh. It's probably worth about £4 in terms of prize money, but it would be nice to have said we were the best of the rest, which really we have been.
I think ultimately it's not really going to mean too much either way. It's more specifically, if we get eighth, it's going to be seen as a failure. You don't really get any kind of credit for finishing seventh, but specifically if you drop down to eighth, the fans are going to be thinking, oh God, how do we manage to finish eighth in a seven horse race? And look, that's the kind of nail in the coffin that really does add a sour note onto the end of a season that should be looked on favourably, should be remembered fondly. So if we can kind of get over the line, then I don't think it's going to give us a boost. We're not going to think, oh yeah, we finished seventh, but it avoids a negative sting in the tail that we may otherwise get.
Yeah, well, I remember us finishing fourth in a 3-horse race for promotion in 08-09, I think that was. I think that came off my Facebook memories from 11 years ago today, actually. I think that's just about 11 years since we had that Birmingham final game of the season. So, I think for predictions in terms of this one then, I'm not going to say my prediction right now because I want to find out what everyone else is saying for reasons that is about to become apparent. But I think really for the team, you just want to hope that they can find a little bit of extra fuel in the tank. You want to see maybe if Tetek's still in, hopefully, you know, more coming back would be a good idea to come alongside Holmes and just shore up the defence a little bit. If the bench is packed with young players and none of the loanees are in, I don't think anyone would complain. Paunovic kind of discussed that for the Norwich game and said, you know, just wanted to get in a good performance, but I don't think that really holds necessarily for the Huddersfield game. So in terms of predictions then, I think it's probably going to be a draw. Whether I put down the league or not is another matter, because at the moment we've got Handbags top on 29 points, Westy on 28, myself and Ollie on 26, and Simi on 20. That's because Handbags took a 4-1 prediction for the Norwich game. He got that in. Myself and Westy had 3-1, so cheers to Team Ibuki for ruining that one. Ollie had 2-0, so he also picked up a point. What are you going to say then for prediction for the Huddersfield game?
Well, my prediction of the Norwich game of a 3-2 win did not turn out particularly fondly at all. My thinking for this one was Reading were going to play really well and win, having kind of already got their fate sealed, essentially, in a manner similar to the Fulham win in, I think, the Premier League when we put in a really awful performance against QPR, drew 0-0, got relegated, and then immediately put in a really good performance against Fulham and won 4-2. And we're thinking, hang on, why the hell couldn't we do this before? Mm. As for the Huddersfield one, boring, 0-0, dreadful. Everyone's kind of happy to see the end of the season.
Yeah, this is definitely the QPR game rather than the Fulham game, isn't it?
Yeah.
In that comparison. Yeah, I think it probably will be 0-0. In terms of, as I say, with the prediction league, with Handbags being on top then, myself and Ollie 3 points behind it, is four people can in theory win it. It's only three in reality because the decider is the perfect predictions where you get the score and the result nailed on. In terms of that, Handbags has five perfect predictions, myself and Westy four. So if that, you know, if it all ends up level with that, then that will be kind of the decider. Ollie's on three perfect predictions, so you can kind of work out how that's going to all simmer or all shake down at the end of the season. So a bit of excitement for us then with the prediction league finishing off, hopefully a bit of excitement for the final week of the season. Sim, it's been a nice chat. This podcast for me has been kind of like where you talk through a bit of a, you know, you've had a bit of a crisis and you've sat down and worked through it and now you feel a bit better for it.
Yeah, it's been therapeutic, hasn't it?
It's good to
put a lid on what's been a thoroughly underwhelming day. I'll be honest, I've not felt particularly hurt today. That all kind of came out a couple of weeks ago when the playoffs started to slip away so avoidably. By now, I'm not too upset. To be honest, I'm glad to get it behind us.
No, I said on last week's podcast, I emotionally checked out of this season after the Luton game. But hopefully, with that final game of the season against Huddersfield, we can have one last hurrah and remember why this team once were the top of the league, once were the playoff staple team that we all hoped were going to be marching to Wembley at the end of the season. Sadly, that won't be happening, but there is still one last chance to celebrate a win and support the team. We'll be back with the review of the season next weekend. Until then, back the boys and make some noise and come on, you arse.
You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail.